Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 60 of Game On with Cody and John.
This is Game On with Cody and John, the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, bringing you the latest and greatest from the world of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, and miniatures wargaming, news and discussions on gaming and gamer culture, plus reviews of some of the best games on the market. And now, from the Game On Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, here are Cody Jones and John Richard.
Well, howdy gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from the beautiful gaming capital of the world. We stand by it. It's the gaming capital of the world.
That's right.
Indianapolis, Indiana, where the snow and ice have finally melted, and we're ready for what spring training's coming up for baseball.
That's right. Our beloved Cincinnati Reds taking to the diamond yet again, and hopefully having a good season.
That's right. And soccer's still going well. I don't know.
I'm following it. Columbus Crew playing some matches, watching Tottenham Hotspur. I'm sticking with it, buddy.
Sounds fascinating.
Well, talking about other fascinating games, we've got a full lid, as CJ Craig from the West Wing would say.
That's right. Proceed.
Well, we mentioned our second look last episode, where we're kind of taking another look at games we may have dismissed or kind of cast off, and we're actually going to give, I guess technically it's the first look, but my first reaction was so full of anger that we're going to actually give a short look at Ticket to Ride Alvin and Dexter, the alien and monster expansion for Ticket to Ride.
I can't believe we're actually doing this, because after two straight episodes of you deriding this game, this game expansion, but we did get a chance to play it and check it out, so we'll give you our second/first look at that one.
Yep, and we've got a Buy, Try, or Deny on tap.
That's right, we're going to be taking a look at it's a real Euro game.
Yeah. Calm down, people on the Dice Tower forums. We do Euros.
We do Euros occasionally, and we're going to be taking a look at London, a great game from Martin Wallace, who I'm not sure if I've ever played anything by Martin Wallace before.
No, I've seen a lot. I've just never had a chance to play Steam or what else has he done? Brass.
I think he did Brass, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ton of stuff.
I should have done more research beforehand. But, Martin Wallace, a real famous game designer who does some great Euro games. We're going to be taking a look at London. And we've got your emails and voicemails in the Game On inbox and lots of other stuff coming up.
So let's get into the rundown and start it right
now.
All right, well, it's time for the rundown. But before we do that, in addition to our normal penance, we would like to welcome all of you listeners from the Dice Tower.
Yes.
With Tom and Eric graciously had us on their episode 199, where we did the top 10 games of 2006.
That's
top
right.
11
Top
game.
11,
that's right.
Because
we were on there. So, yep. I had to look up what was made in 2006 because, they do those yearly things. I'm like, I don't keep track of that. So.
It's actually a nice feature on Board Game Geek that you can just filter by that and it'll give you a whole list. So
you convenient. Can filter by year and by rating. So you can kind of, you're not getting Trivial Pursuit 8th edition or something on there.
As good as that one was in 2006.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites. But if you want to check us out, it's go to thedicetower.com, and we're on episode 199. Their best episode probably ever.
That's right.
Of the best.
And no, we really, really do appreciate Tom and Eric having us on the show. And so for any of you who are new listeners from having come over from listening to that show, welcome, and hope you enjoy what we do here. And Yeah,
stay a while. Mm-hmm. And something we normally do is our penance, and that is our great sponsor, Myriad Games, who sponsors us on behalf of Friendly professional games.
Friendly professionals.
That's right. That's a lot of words in there. Something we want to mention about Myriad Games that a lot of our listeners who have become Myriad MVPs is that they have the flexible reservation list. Now, Dan and his crew at Myriad Games are very good at keeping their fingers to your gaming pulse. And a lot of them, I've heard people say that they've gotten hard to find things like Seven Wonders. It sells out online quickly, but Dan, if he knows you want it, you will be taken care of and you will get your copy in that first wave. I would almost go so far as to guarantee it. I don't know what Dan would say, but they do such a great job at those hot releases. I've got my copy of Wrath of a Shardalon right there.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Man,
can't wait to bust that bad boy out. But definitely check out MyriadGames.com, learn all about their MVP membership, and get on their flexible reservation list. John,
yes.
What have you been playing?
All right. Well, the main cool thing that happened in the last 2 weeks that I want to talk about in my rundown is the Game On Game Night, the inaugural Game On Game Night that happened on February the 15th. We finally were able to get it done after, you know, being thwarted by the ice and snow for the first time we were trying to do this. And I was just overwhelmed by the response. Now, I sent out a big invitation on Facebook, and we talked about it on the show and that kind of thing. I had no idea how many people were going to respond or were going to be there. You know, I pretty much had said that if 5 to 10 people showed up, then that would be a success and a good thing to build on. We had 22 gamers come out for the first Game On Game Night, and we just had a great time. So, and a lot of them were listeners to the show, so they had heard about it through our podcast. So, cool stuff.
Absolutely. And if you want to take part in the next one, just go to gameonpodcast.com, and you can click the Game Night button, and that will tell you when the next one is and any other pertinent information. But come and check it out. It's a great fun.
That's right. Yeah. Next one's March the 1st, but it'll pretty much be the first and third Tuesday night of every month. And so it's, you know, at the Avon United Methodist Church, if you're a local gamer or feel like driving, come on out and check it out.
Absolutely.
So the 22 of us, we played lots of games, and there's actually a geek list that Sean Johnson, who is kind of the co-creator of this game night with Cody and I, who put together a list of all the games that were played. He was nice enough to go around with a list, and as people finished games, they wrote down their names and the scores. And when he first handed it to me, I guess, apologies to you, Sean, but I kind of thought, this is kind of lame. Why are we writing down like our scores and everything? But as he put the geek list together, it was really cool to be able to catalog what we've done. And I guess a lot of other gaming groups do this too with geek lists, but I'd, you know, never really been a part of that before. So that was really cool. And people were able to comment on the games that they played. And anyway, so when I the game, as far as the games that I was able to play, I started off with a game of Alien Frontiers, and was able to play that with three other guys, including we got a chance to meet Jeremy Salinas, who is
Jeremy D. Salinas,
who is a local gamer and is pretty well known on Board Game Geek under the username Drakenstrike. He puts together these really amazing.
That's
high
what
definition
the D stands for.
For what?
Jeremy Drakenstrike Salinas.
Oh, it probably does. Yeah. I did not ask him what his middle name was. It probably is. Anyway, so he is putting together these really great high-definition video reviews of games and components overviews. Really some of the coolest stuff that I've seen as far as video game reviews, video board game reviews.
Yeah, his Mansions of Madness three-parter. Parts 1 and 2 are up as we record, and that is just... that's gorgeous.
It's startlingly good.
Pretty good stuff.
So it was a real pleasure to get to meet Jeremy, and we got a chance to play Alien Frontiers, played a full four-player game of that. And we also played Seven Wonders, which getting better and better every time. The more that I play that one, the more that I like it, mainly because, you know, I know all the rules really well now, and I'm just looking forward to playing more games of that with everybody who knows the rules.
Yeah.
Because every game I've played so far, I'm teaching the rules to somebody, which is fine because, you know, it's easy to get them in the pool there. But I'm looking forward to playing more of that. On a side note, Jeremy completely destroyed us in Seven Wonders. He got the whole science track and with all the green cards. And he was to my left, too, so I felt like...
you got to bury those, man.
I wasn't even paying attention. That was my problem. Is I was so busy focusing on what I was doing. But by the middle of the third age, I look over to the left and there's a sea of green. I'm like, oh,
you are
totally screwed.
You are a podcasting professional.
I should know more about this. That's right, yeah. So enjoyed that one and finished up the night with a game of Xscape, a great little push-your-luck dice-rolling game from, of all people, Rainer Knizia. I played a full 6-player game of that and had a terrific fun time. Other games that were played at the Game On Game Night that I didn't participate in included a couple games of Puzzle Strike. That one got out a couple times. Tobago, Castle Panic, saw someone playing Kingsburg. So lots of great stuff. I think Sean taught a game of Glenmore, which is looks like a pretty cool Scottish-themed game. So lots of fun at the Game On Game Night. I just had a great time. I'm just gushing because I had so much fun. As far as non-Game On Game Night related stuff, I had a chance to play a lot of stuff with Cody, so I'll let him talk about that.
Thanks, buddy.
But I also, you may remember if you're a longtime listener to the podcast, that when I used to have a different job at a different place, we had a segment called The Lunch Table, where I would get together with some friends at work, and we would sit down and play games, and I'd do some recordings of some segments, a little mini game reviews. Well, now it's been a little bit of a longer process of finding gamers at my new job, but I found that there are quite a few people that are interested in playing games, and so dusted off the old Magic the Gathering deck and played like a little three-player game of Magic this past week. Played with a guy that I work with who plays Friday Night Magic quite often, is actually a real regular tournament player, which basically means I got destroyed.
Yeah.
But it's really good to be gaming at work again, and I think this week we're going to try to get even more games to the table, so you may see a return of the lunch table segment. Who knows?
We'll be waiting.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Cody, what have you been playing this past couple weeks?
I've had kind of a birthday gaming.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I had some family come in and some friends, and we played Seven Wonders. Played a full seven-player game of that.
Yes.
Very exciting. Cool. I don't know what I was smoking that first time, but that game, like John, just keeps getting better and better.
I keep getting better and better.
What?
You said that game, like me, keeps getting better and better.
Oh, well.
I feel like I do keep getting better and better. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's move on. Also got to bring The Resistance to the table. Haven't played that since our Myriad Games excursion, and that is a great game.
Talk about that one just a little bit more, because that is a great, great game.
What do you want me to say?
Kind of a rundown of the rules. Is it? You've said that it's like... what Are You the Traitor should have been?
Yeah, it's take the kind of paranoia and the... a lot of the rule system of Werewolf and distill it down for a 5 to 10 player experience. It's pretty much a best of five between the spies or the werewolves and the resistance or the villagers. And it has some other rules insofar as like selecting certain teams and, it's very kind of concentrated in that, you know, you only have really five turns so that but the paranoia is still the same. So I would definitely check it out. It's like I said, it's what Are You the Traitor should have been. It's that great werewolf experience for 5 to 10 people, and we had a blast. You know, we played a few games, and it felt like the best werewolf game. You know, accusations flying around. It was a hoot.
Very fun. Had some raised voices in that.
That's
game.
Right.
That was cool. Yeah.
Let's see. I've also had a chance to play Puzzle Strike, which I'm liking. Very fun game. I've played since I've acquired Tumblin' Dice. My gaming group is obsessed with it, as am I, and I've probably played about like 20 games of it over the past week. I mean, it's hanging on the wall so everyone sees it, and
he's staring at it lovingly now. It's
hey,
funny.
Hey, buddy, I'll be with you in a minute. But yeah, I've played a ton of that. I got to play Shadows Over Camelot, and if you follow us on Facebook or Twitter, you saw that we actually completed the Grail Quest.
I think that was a stage picture.
It wasn't. It was the first thing we did.
Staged.
We did it with a traitor, and the traitor managed to stay hidden throughout the game and thus caused our defeat by flipping over two of the white swords to black. We lost 7-6.
Wow.
And I was the only one who ever thought he might have been the traitor, but I didn't go so far as to accuse him, which was dumb.
Well, but that's caused you problems in the past where you tried to accuse someone, mm-hmm. and everybody immediately thinks that you're the traitor.
Yeah, so...
Because you are pretty... Conniving.
Pretty shifty, yeah.
Shifty, yeah.
So that was a fun game. It was good to bring that out. And John taught me Yomi, which is
Yomi.
The new hotness in, I guess, card fighting.
In that great genre of two-player Street Fighter-esque puzzle fighting game, sort of.
It was interesting. I mean, I see why it's getting the pop that it's getting. I need to play it a few more times just to get more of the strategy under my fingers there, but... it was interesting. Yeah, I'd give it another go.
And we just had two decks. I didn't order the full set of it, but so we only got a little experience with the two decks there. But yeah, I really like it.
Yeah,
too.
Definitely really themey, and I can see why it's popular. So, and it was interesting to see how the characters from Yomi, how their counterparts in Puzzle Strike, how that all connected. You know, the speedy person in Yomi, it's like, oh, they get more actions in Puzzle Strike. Oh, that's how they show that they're fast. That was a neat little game mechanic thing there.
You almost kind of wonder if it would have been cool. I know this would have been too expensive and probably impossible, but, you know, the new video game Marvel vs. Capcom just came out, you know, fighting game like that.
Right.
That if Puzzle Strike and Yomi actually had the licenses to be able to have, like, Ryu and, Iron Man and all those characters, if that would have been pretty neat, I think.
Yeah, that would have been real expensive.
So, but it gives the same sort of idea.
Yeah. Well, that's all the games I played.
All right. Awesome. So now it's time to take a second look. A look back and a look forward, if you will.
I will.
It seems like it was only yesterday, well, it was actually about two episodes ago, that Cody was saying these words.
expansion for Ticket to Ride, Alvin and Dexter.
Alvin and the Chipmunks and Dexter. Right?
And it's basically a giant Godzilla-like monster and a giant, like, you know, robot War of the Worlds sort of thing that you add to Ticket to Ride, and they terrorize cities and they change the game. What is that? I mean, that is about the dumbest thing I've ever... It'll probably be done very well.
I'm sure the miniatures will be beautiful.
Yeah, and, you know, even the rules will probably be done very well. But, I mean, does Alan R. Moon need another car or something? I mean, that is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Take a game like Ticket to Ride and add a damn monster.
Yes.
Memories.
Do you remember those words?
I do.
Okay. Well, you know, now we've zipped back to the present, and now it's time to take a second look, or a first look, after your crappy preliminary look.
Whoa, I thought it was crappy.
perhaps you're too quick to judge. Well, we'll see. I'm getting ahead of myself.
You are.
Let's take a look at the new expansion for Ticket to Ride, known as the Alvin and Dexter expansion, yes. Right? Okay. So, Cody, why don't you launch in and tell us about it? Because I want to set this up that I did not buy this at all. As a matter of fact, I didn't think we'd ever have the opportunity to play it because of what you just heard there previously. And then all of a sudden I, you know, show up at Cody's place and he pulls out the Alvin and Dexter. So go ahead and tell us about that, Cody.
I was thinking back listening to that episode and I was like, you know, that may have been a bit harsh.
You were really drunk, weren't you?
I was completely wasted. You know, I still think the idea is kind of dumb, but I'm like, well, you know, I'll give it a shot. You know, and if I don't like it, I can give it away or whatever.
It was cheap.
Right? It was cheap. I mean, it was $14.
Yeah,
and you can use it with any Ticket to Ride, so I guess that was okay. So I called up Myriad Dan, and he had his Myriad Mule bring it over. And it comes in this this little bitty package. Probably, I don't know, it's this little square box.
Yeah, like, you know, 3 inches square.
Coaster size, yeah, I would say.
Not big.
And the whole idea of the expansion is it's essentially two miniatures and some cards. And the two miniatures are an invading space alien and a big Godzilla-like dinosaur.
Which makes total sense.
Of course, when you're playing a train game.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you can play with any version of Ticket to Ride, as I mentioned, and whenever one of these guys are in a city, the city is in chaos, and you can't claim routes going into or out of that city. And at the end of the game, if those figures are on a city that is on one of your tickets, you only get half points for that. Of course, it also works in reverse. Like, say you had a route going from like Chicago to Los Angeles, and Los Angeles was in chaos, and if you didn't complete that route, then you only subtract half the points. Oh, so there's a little strategy there. But every time you move these critters around, which you can do so by spending a locomotive to move it up to three cities away, or two locomotives to move it up to six, you get a card for that particular monster. And at the end of the game, whoever has the most Alvin cards gets a 15-point kicker. Whoever has the most Dexter cards gets a 15-point kicker, which I think may be a little much, because if you have someone really hammering that the two monster strategy, that's a 30-point swing.
Yeah.
Pretty big. So that's pretty much the rules. John and I busted it out, and upon playing it, John, what did you think? You go first.
It's fine. I think it's fine. It's a decent expansion. I think that there are certain situations where it's not going to work real well. I really think in a two-player game, it doesn't end up being that interesting unless you're playing on one of those really tight boards like the Switzerland board or the Nordic countries board, where there's already a lot of blocking out going on. You can really kind of, you know, screw your opponent there by putting the monsters there. But if you're playing two players on the American board or on the big Europe board, you can pretty much avoid that stuff pretty easily. Unless you make that a focus of your game. And I think that's the problem. Maybe the problem is that those locomotive cards are really valuable in the game for route building. And when you have to spend those to move the monsters around, you just sort of have to weigh out, is it really worth getting that 15-point bonus? Is that going to outweigh the benefit you might get by finishing a ticket with that locomotive? But no, it was fine. The little miniatures are cute. And, you know, you can paint them up if you're a painter, and they'll look really, really cool. And so I think it's a good addition. It's not, I think it's better than the dice expansion that came out, which I don't even remember at this point.
Yeah, you know, playing it wasn't terrible. I still think maybe it's a touch overpriced at $14 or $15.
Okay,
it's more $10 for me. But the miniatures are nice, and I think, like John said, if you're doing either two player on a small map, or if you have a big five player game, I think it could get it could get kind of interesting, you know, moving the creatures around. But it just still seems out of theme to me. It's not as bad as I thought it was. You know, I'm glad I gave it the second look. I'll probably actually keep it. You know, it's nice to bring out. I wouldn't want to, you know, if someone's learning the game, I don't think I would want to put that in. But it kind of breathes some new life into an old tried and true favorite.
Yeah, one other thing that I was thinking of is that if you're a person who likes Ticket to Ride because it's not a directly confrontational game, because, I mean, other than the fact that you might just incidentally block somebody, you don't have to go after someone in that game. You can just sort of play your own game, play your routes, and then if you get attacked or blocked, you know, you find your way around it. It doesn't have to be a confrontational game. Adding these elements to it make it a much more confrontational game, especially if you're playing with other people that want to, you know, play that little sort of pseudo meta game there.
Yeah.
And so I think that might make it unappealing to someone who just wants to play sort of their multiplayer solitaire, play their own game sort of thing. It's going to really mess with them.
Yeah. So on a second look, I would say, you know, as John said, it's fine.
It's good. Yeah. I mean, it's decent.
It's not essential. It's not a complete waste of money. It's just this very kind of quirky expansion that, you know, isn't half bad. So I'm glad I gave it a second look.
Yeah. That's a good idea to give things a second look. Yeah. And you know, and I think that the, if you have multiple versions of the game, you should pick this up, definitely. Because you could try it out on different versions, and that might be kind of fun to your Ticket to Ride experience. So, well done, Cody.
On giving it a second look there. I'm growing.
Yeah, I'll give you a little hand clap there.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady.
Build it up with iron bars, iron bars. Build it up with iron bars, my fair lady.
So to continue themes of resolution, we are doing a full-on Euro here, which normally does not happen because, you know, I try to filter these things out. But we
this one slipped through under the radar. Slipped through. Right?
But we are taking a look at Martin Wallace's new-ish game from Mayfair Games, London.
Yep. This is a 2-4 player game that is about sort of rebuilding the city of London after the Great Fire
of all places.
No other Great Fire. And the overview of the game says that it starts just after the Great Fire of London and ends with the advent of the 20th century. So it's sort of you managing the city of London, or a portion of the city, from that point when the Great Fire happened up through the advent of the 1900s. And it is a game by Martin Wallace, who, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think that either of us had ever played anything by Martin Wallace. And I know that many of you Euro gamers in our audience would you know, gasp in horror over that. But trying to broaden our horizons, you know, and check out designers that we haven't checked out before. And so thought this was a good one to start with. Well, one of the main reasons why thought it was a good one to start with is because we were nicely supplied this game by Mayfair Games. So many thanks to Mayfair Games for sending us a review copy of this. And so we're excited to give it a try. So.
You know, as an aside, and this isn't a Euro slam, but I just want to get out of the way.
Here we go.
It seems like all of the box art on the Euro games, you know, is just completely unappealing because this one is just kind of these pastel colors and you have, you know, these, you know, stodgy, you know, British guys.
They've got wigs on.
Yeah, they're looking at plans and such. You know, John and I were joking earlier. It's like, what if the Fantasy Flight and, like, the Mayfair art department switched?
Yeah.
You know, you had Fantasy Flight doing the box art for London. You've got buildings exploding and fire.
Machine guns.
Yeah, you got London in this, you know, spiky London, you know. And then, you know, conversely, you have, you know, like Twilight Imperium, but it's all, you know, in the Gothic script. And it's like, oh, it's Twilight Imperium.
That would be funny.
A deduction game. You know?
A deduction game.
It's just, you know, I don't knock it because the art is fine and the box layout's fine. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's very calm. It's very serene. And just an observation.
It's very European.
It's very European.
Okay. So this game is in general.
London.
Okay. All right. Okay. That was scary. This is a card management game, pretty much more than anything. There is a board that's involved, but as we'll talk about a little bit later, I'm not even sure if the board is really that necessary. You could probably have abstracted the board, but we'll get there in a second. Like I said, the game is for 2-4 players and plays in, what would you say, Cody, for 2-4 players? It's My wife and I played a game of this last night. It probably took about an hour and a half for two players.
That's about 45 minutes a player?
Nah, it might be about right. It might. I'm not sure if it's necessarily a per player thing. Like, yeah, if you play a three player or four player game, it might end up being about the same amount of time. It's the reason why we're kind of hesitating is that the timer in the game is the deck of cards. And it's a really large deck of cards that you get with the game. And when that deck runs out, that sort of signals when the end of the game is going to happen. So, you have 110 of these cards. And so let's just kind of get into what you're going to be doing in this game. So you're going to have a board which has a map of the city of London that's divided up into all these different boroughs. You got the Thames River running right through the center there. And then at the bottom of the board, you have this place called the card display, which is where cards are going to be, wait for it, displayed.
Ah, I see what they did there.
Yeah. And then you're going to have cards in your hand, and then in front of you, you'll have an area called your building display, which are going to be stacks of cards that you're going to be setting up during a certain portion of the game. There are money tokens. You have little counters that are worth £1 and £5. Then you also have what are called poverty markers, which are extremely annoying, and you get little cubes that represent one poverty and little wooden discs that represent five poverty. Now,
some of us took care of our city, sir.
We'll get to that in a second, you and your poverty management. You also have the opportunity to take loans from the bank so that there are tokens for loans. There are victory point counters, and each player is going to get 11 building counters, which are these little square cardboard tokens in your player color for building on the board. So everybody's going to get six cards to start off with, and then you have the big stack of cards in the middle of the table there. The cards are divided up into three different kinds of decks, the A, B, and C deck, and you just have to shuffle them up separately and make sure that A is on top, B in the middle, C on the bottom. The object of the game is to win, and the way that you win is by having the most victory points at the end. And there's several different ways that you can get victory points in the game, and they're all pretty much, almost all, are moderated by these cards. So, on your turn, you're going to be doing one of four things. The first thing that you're going to do on your turn is to draw a card. And then, on your turn, you can either play cards, you can run your city, which is basically activating the cards that are in front of you on your building display. You can buy land, which is buying a borough on the board there and placing one of your building markers there. Or you can take three cards. And so it's basically making a choice of one of those four options. So it's pretty straightforward. Now, here's how this is going to work. When you draw a card, you're going to draw a card either from the top of the deck or take it from the card display that is on the bottom of the board. And you know, so at the beginning of the game, there's not going to be any cards there, so you'll take it from the top. The first thing that you can do is play cards. And so you're going to play cards out of your hand onto the table in front of you. And you have to kind of decide throughout the course of the game how many stacks of these cards you want to have in front of you. And you can have as many or as few as you want, but you'll see in a second that having a whole lot of stacks of cards may not be in your best interest. The way you play cards in this game is a very interesting mechanic because there are four colors of cards in the game. It's a very interesting palette of colors, actually. It's like brown, pink, blue, and gray.
Yeah.
And so whenever you want to play a card onto the table, you have to what's called expend a card of the same color. So if I want to play a brown card on the table in front of me, I have to take another brown card out of my hand and place it onto the card display. So this is just sort of the overarching way that you play cards in this game, is that for every card you play, you have to expend a card that's of the same color. In addition, on the top left of the card, there might be an additional cost in money or some other thing, usually money, that you might have to pay to the bank in order to play the card in front of you. Now, there are two kinds of cards in the game overall. There are cards that have this sort of stone foundation at the bottom, and then there's some that don't. The ones that have a stone foundation are the only ones that you can play into your building display. Each of them represents a building or a shop or some kind of a monument or something. And that's sort of the very loose theme in the game, is that you're building all these different things in London. On that stone foundation, there are three segments. The left segment is what you have to spend to be able to activate the card. In the middle is what you will gain by activating that card. And then on the right, it will either say that you need to flip that card over after you activate it, so it's like a one-time use, or it'll just be blank, and that means that it can stay face up and can be used possibly for multiple turns. So those are that's the kind of card that can be played on your building display. There's a few other cards that you can discard to do specific things like gain more cards or just special abilities throughout the game. And those you can't play in your building display. You'll just play them on your turn. So during your play cards phase, you can play as many cards as you want down in front of you. And like I said, you're sort of forming piles of cards as you go. Then at the end of the turn, you have to discard down to 9 cards. So that's going to be the end of whatever you decide to do in your turn. That's what you have to do at the end is discard down the 9 cards. The second thing that you can do in your turn is to run your city. And so that is going to involve activating those cards like I mentioned. And so you'll basically just decide which of the cards you want to activate. And then, you know, you'll go through each of those cards and look at the leftmost part of that stone foundation, pay the cost if there is one, and then gain the benefit that's in the middle. Those benefits might be money, might be victory points. You might gain poverty cubes. You're going to start off with 5 poverty cubes. I should also mention, you start off with 5 poverty cubes and 5 pounds of money, and you can gain more poverty cubes or lose poverty cubes via these cards. So if you see a white cube, that means you'll lose a poverty point. If you see a black cube, you'll gain one. And so you just go through the different cards and gain the benefits from those cards. If they say that you have to flip them over, then you'll just flip them over to the backside. And then that's the end of running your city. Now, at the very end of running your city, that's when you have to calculate your poverty. And poverty is the thing that you're really fighting a lot during this game.
Some of us were.
Some of us were. Cody did a pretty good job of managing his poverty in the game that we played.
I'm a man of the people, what can I say?
You're an amazing man of the people. What you're going to do is you're going to count the number of piles of cards that you have in front of you, and the number of stacks. Add to that the number of cards that are in your hand, and then you're going to subtract any of the number of boroughs that you have bought on the board. And we'll talk about how to do that in a second. But, so if you decide to run your city right away, then you won't have any boroughs, and it'll be number of stacks plus number of cards in your hand minus 0. And then you'll take that number of poverty tokens. So you have to be real careful how many cards you have in your hand and also how many cards you have in front of you, because that could end up being a pretty large amount of poverty that you have to take on. The third thing that you can do on your turn is to buy land. And on the board, it's going to tell you how much it costs to buy particular boroughs in the city. There are 3 areas in the very center that have red text for the name. It's the city, it's Westminster, and there's like a third one that's got 2 names that I don't remember. But you have to build on one of those first. Then after the first player has built on one of those 3 that are have the red text on them, then you could just have to build adjacent to any player token. So you don't even have to build adjacent to the stuff that you've already bought. You just have to build adjacent to something that's already owned. On the board there, it'll tell you how much it costs to buy that piece of land. Then it's going to tell you the number of cards that you will take as sort of a reward for that. And then there's also a marker for the number of victory points that you'll get at the end of the game for owning that. Now, I say getting cards is a benefit, but in this game, getting cards is not necessarily a good thing, because when you get to that running the city step, you may not want to have a whole lot of cards in your hand. So a lot of the strategy in this game is knowing when to hold them and when to fold them, you know, knowing when to get rid of those cards and expend them and when to hold on to them for certain things.
When not to count your winnings.
That's right.
If you do it while you're sitting at the table, that would not be a proper thing to do.
Thank you,
Ken. There'll be plenty of time for counting.
When the dealing is complete.
When the dealing has reached a conclusion.
Thank you, Kenneth Rogers.
The great poet of our generation.
All right. So the fourth thing that you can do on your turn, of course, is just to take 3 cards. So that is pretty much how the mechanics of the game work. It's just that simple. But there's this very interesting play of taking cards and expending cards. When the card display gets full, the card display has 10 spaces on it, but if you play with a 4-player game, you use all 10. If you play with a 3-player game, you use 8 of those spaces, and a 2-player game, you use 6. Once the card display is full, if you have to expend a card, the entire top row of the cards basically get discarded. The bottom row slides up, and then you'll have a space to put your card. So you're cycling through these cards, milling through them as this game goes along. And it's a lot of interesting decisions, as many Euro games do, as to what you're going to play, what you're going to let go, what are you going to expend, and what are you going to actually play in your building display. So there's a couple other kind of details of scoring, things like there's these things called underground tokens. Later in the game, there's a card called the underground where you can place – it's kind of like you're building the subway. You can place two underground tokens in adjacent spaces, and they'll give you additional victory points at the end of the game for having those. So the game will continue until the card deck runs out, and then once the card decks run out, everybody else will get one everyone after that player will get one additional turn, and then that's the end of the game. So here's kind of how the scoring works. It's very interesting. You're going to gain a poverty point for every card that is left in your hand at the end of the game. You have to pay back any loans that you get. If you took a 10-pound loan, you have to pay it back at 15 pounds. If you aren't able to pay back the loan, you lose 7 victory points. You're going to go through on the board and look at all the different places where you've built and add up all the victory points for those. And it's kind of nice because they have all these – there's times during the middle of the game where you'll get victory points and you'll get little victory point chips for those. But then they've also supplied with the game a whole bunch of larger number of victory point chips. So when you start adding up all your points, you can deal in chips. You don't have to be adding numbers up in your head or jotting stuff down on paper.
Yeah, that was a nice touch.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. So you can add up all of the building spaces that you have and get all the victory points for those. You're also going to get points for cards that are in your building display, whether they're flipped or not. Inside of the card display where the picture is, some cards have a little icon with a victory point number in it. And so just for having played that on your building display, at the end of the game, you'll get the points for those. So you're going to add up all of those things. And then the poverty point thing is very interesting in that you're going to look at everybody's poverty points. And then whoever has the fewest number of poverty points, they will discard all of them. And everybody else will discard that same number. So it's you know, it's not so much that you care how many poverty points you have. It's just like you want to have the fewest. Mm-hmm. That's the best position to be in. And then you're going to lose victory points that represent the difference between the person who has the fewest and you. And then there's a track on the board that says how many victory points you lose for particular amounts of poverty points. And so you add up all your points and determine a winner. So that is London. So it's a very interesting, like I said, card management game. A lot of good strategy. Well, Cody, I've talked for a long time here. Why don't you tell me a little bit what you think about London, a Euro game?
I know. We got to the table, and at first look, I thought it was going to be really boring. Just seeing the board and the cards and just how that it was presented.
Great box artwork.
Yeah, I was just... It didn't look very exciting, but I have to admit, the more we played it, I by the end of the game, I was really enjoying it. I mean, it almost felt like Days of Wonderian.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a word.
Uh-huh.
Because it seemed like everything was, you only had a few decisions to make,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the turns were not complicated. You only had a few decisions to make, and then it moved on. So gameplay was very quick in that regard. But yet it rewarded a long-term strategy and a feel. So it was a really nice blend. It was a deep game, I think, but each turn was not overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would say, and I'll probably talk about this more when we get into the points, is that I think it's just a touch long. I think it could be cut down by about 25-30% on the cards and still be a meaningful experience. It was getting a bit repetitive. I'm probably getting ahead of myself on the points here, but...
No, that's fine. Well, we'll go ahead and just talk about that, and especially for new listeners. Sort of the way we review our games here on Game On with Cody and John is we do sort of a buy, try, or deny system where we talk about buy points for a game, which are the things we really like about a game, try points, which are things that are kind of middle of the road, and then deny points, parts of the game that we think are just real red flags and, you know, not good parts of the game. And then we just sort of give you our overall idea about what we think of the game. So for me, some buy points for the game are that I think the components are very serviceable. Maybe that wouldn't be a buy point, I guess, and now that I think about it. But I felt like all the iconography was very clear, you know, and I think the game is very easy to teach because of that. I don't think that anything on there is going to be confusing at all. It's by no means a race for the galaxy as far as iconography. So it's pretty easy to understand. I really like the way that the strategy is best I can describe it as like a push and a pull there. If you decide to go for a whole lot of money well, that's great, but you're probably going to gain a whole bunch of poverty for doing money. And if you, you know, if you gain a whole lot of land, well, then you're going to run out of money. And then, you know, it's going to be more difficult for you to get money. And so you have to really balance things out, because you'll either end up with a lot of one thing and, you know, none of another thing that you need. But at the same time, you don't feel like you're, it's got that Eurogame feel where you feel like you aren't able to do everything that you want, but you don't feel tense about that. Like, I never felt like, you know, I have five things I want to do and I can only do one of them.
Yeah, it's
like,
it's not the Agricola effect.
Right, right. It's like, I have five things I want to do and I can do four of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that way, it has a much more relaxing experience. So I really did like that about the game. Cody, buy points for you?
As you mentioned, the ease of teaching, you know, it is just a real kind of straightforward game to learn. Not a lot of actions on your turn. You know, it's a player's turn is not very long. But the other buy point, this just feels like a very tightly designed game. Like this has been play tested a lot. It just feels well balanced and tightly designed. So I would say it's a solid game, and it's deeper than teaching it and then a player's turn would lead you to believe.
Try points for me would be probably length, I think. Although when Cody and Kaylin and I played this game, I would have put that as a deny point, because we really did feel like, well, we were probably it was almost lunchtime, so we were pretty hungry. Yeah. But you know, we were kind of like, oh, let's just get through this. My goodness, it's taking a long time. But I played a two-player game with my wife last night, and that it took an hour and a half, I guess, but it didn't. It felt like it went by pretty quickly. As a matter of fact, I knew about the length thing ahead of time, and so I suggested, hey, let's take the bottom 15, 20 cards out of the game, and that'll just shorten it. You know, and she said that was fine. But then we got to almost the end of that deck, and she was saying, well, let's go ahead and continue. And so we ended up playing a full game of it, and it didn't really feel like it was too terribly long. So I think if you have players who know how to play and can just go through their turns really fast, that is a nice benefit of the game, is that you don't have that many things you can do in your turn, and the turns go pretty fast. So try points for you?
Yeah, I would say that's a try point for me as well. I think if everyone knows the game, it'll go a little quicker. It just seemed for that first game especially that, you know, you only have a certain amount of actions, but you only have a certain amount of actions. So it was getting a little repetitive, but it was nice because it was, you know, you had to have some thought into it, but it wasn't a brain burner. You know, right. you could chat while you play it. But yeah, I still think it's just about 25-30% too long.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any deny points for the game?
It might be hard to get to the table if you have a lot of people like me who are recovering Ameritrashers. You know, I'm reaching across the aisle. I'm trying to play more Euro games. I know people who are just Ameritrash only. You know, maybe how I was a few years ago. But, you know, it's like, well, it's London, and it's, you know, I think that would be
hard. Look, they're looking at plans.
Yeah, you know, and I guess the other deny point is don't use Times New Roman on the box.
Oh, okay.
Come on now.
Yeah, with a little graphic design on.
Sorry, a little snobbery moment there.
My only deny point is probably just an indictment on Eurogames in general. Wow. And I probably like Eurogames in general more than Cody does. But I just find that it's really difficult for me to make a link between the theme and the mechanics. Like I said, this is probably just an indictment on Eurogames in general, is that as I'm playing these cards and I'm doing these things, I'm running my city, and so I'm getting these victory points for the shipping dock card that I have. I don't feel like there's much of a link between what I'm doing and an actual theme. There were a few cards, like there's a card called the Shops, where you can play that card in front of you in your building display, and then every time you play another card to your building display, you put a 1 pound chip on it. And so then when you activate the card, you take all the money off the chip. So that sort of economic feel to it, that made sense. Shops, you know, there was a bank card that sort of made sense, but I just felt like it was a real stretch to link the mechanics to the, like, I felt like you could have made it a completely different theme or made it no theme at all. It could have just been, you know, turn card over, get chip A, you know, mm-hmm. And even like I mentioned earlier, the board, it's a nice little map of London, I guess, but I mean, you don't really use the board that much. You know, you could have almost had just an abstracted list of locations and places to place your little token to show that you've bought it, and that would have sufficed. You didn't really even need to have a map. You know, there's not a lot going on the board. This is really more of a card game than a board game.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think about that? I think that that's maybe just an overall Euro thing that I have a problem with.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm a themey guy, but you know, on games like this, it's easier to see through it.
Yeah.
And you say, well, then obviously they needed a theme. They couldn't sell it as a, you know, just an abstracted thing. But yeah, it was a little bit, you know, like I said, some cards worked, but then, you know, I played St. Paul's Cathedral. Well, that doesn't, you know, it's just a blue card, you know?
Right. And you know, there are Euro games that do a better job of linking theme together. So, yeah, that might be a topic for another show, just the, you know, the theminess or lack of theminess mm-hmm. of Euro games. But anyway, it's a very tightly designed game. I would give it a recommendation. I think I would yeah. give it a buy or a strong try.
Yeah.
I think it is really, really good. And it's one that I'll want to get to the table more often.
So. I would give it a vigorous try. I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought. If you like Euro games, I think you'll definitely like it. If you're on the fence, then definitely try it out. But I think it was a good time. I'd like to play it again, actually.
Yep. So this is London by Tree Frog Games, distributed by Mayfair, by Martin Wallace. So check it out. Well, it's Game On Inbox time, and we're going to start off with a little bit of gaming news. And Cody, what you got at the news desk?
Well, as you know, we're big fans of Summoner Wars, the card/miniature game. Well, not really miniature, but...
It's like a miniature skirmish game with cards, yeah.
Exactly. Made by Colby Dotch, who is a great guy, great game designer, and
a wonderful hat that he wears.
Yeah, a plaid hat.
Indeed.
Very, very nice. Big news from the Summoner Wars camp. Coming out in June of this year, they're going to be coming out with the Summoner Wars Master Set. Now, it's this big box set that has 6 completely new faction decks. They look really neat. You have things like the Shadow Elves, Sand Goblins, the Benders, a lot of neat things.
The Benders?
Yes, they can. You can choose the Benders and confound your foe, turning his own troops against him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought they're just like heavy drinkers or something.
No. you get one of the premium boards, which, you know, if you play Summoner Wars and you don't have one of the premium boards, you need to get one because it takes the game to a completely different level.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing how that little aesthetic piece really helps.
Yeah, you can throw away those paper boards. It has and it comes with a revised rule book, some dice, some wound markers, and a nice plastic tray for those decks and other ones.
You're all about the plastic trays, aren't you?
Big fan of the plastic trays.
You're all about storage.
That's right. But and it's going to retail for $49.95, which I think is a steal considering you're going to get 6 faction decks.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited about this. If you follow Summoner Wars, you know that they're coming out with new factions all the time. And they've come out with these reinforcement packs so you can kind of breathe some new life into your existing things. And if you keep listening, you might just find a way to win some of your own.
Ooh.
That was a tease
in
the business. So check out Summoner Wars, and we'll be looking for that in June.
All right. Well, one of the big things in the gaming industry that's happened in the last couple of weeks is the New York Toy and Game Fair, which, much like Chi-Tag, the Chicago Toy and Game Fair that I've been to a couple years ago and covered on a previous episode of the show, this is a big fair for really seems like more retail games, like the folks that want to get their game design published by Hasbro or something like that. And so it's a lot more geared towards the mass market. But there's some interesting things that have come out of that and some interesting game news. And one thing that I wanted to mention is a new game and coming out from Hasbro called Battleship Galaxies. Now, you know, I'm sure that all of you listening have played one or many painful games of Battleship in your time. And actually, that's one of the games that I grew up on playing that I really enjoyed. And it's one that I play with my son. And it's not too bad. I mean, it's a big, you know, guessing fest.
Right.
But, you know, there's some fun to it there. But they're coming out with this new version called Battleship Galaxies. And here's just some of the text that I found online here. It says, it's a space combat game that has very little to do with its namesake. The two sides in this struggle, the Human Intergalactic Space Navy.
Or Higgin.
Hizen. That'd be
Human
Intergalactic Space.
Oh, Hizen, yeah, that's right.
Higgin.
Sorry.
Something like that. Yeah. And the alien Retroridians.
Of course.
Are represented by fleets of detailed plastic spaceships. Detailed plastic spaceships for like, that's interesting. Among the fleets are different types of ships, each with their own movement, shield rating, hull strength, and weapons. Sounds to me like this is like Heroescape in space.
Yeah, I'd give it a whirl.
I don't know. So yeah, so the combat takes place on a board with hex-shaped spaces. Each turn, you, player can spend it's like some energy points. They can move, fire weapons, and do other things. It's got kind of an action point system, something like that. The goal of the game, as well as the location on the board of obstacles, energy sources, wormholes, and shield generators are set by the scenario, a number of which are provided in a scenario booklet.
Wow.
So that sounds pretty cool. I don't know. The pictures that I saw online of it look neat, you know, and there's like a shield around each ship, and you can, as you find this, there's still like a battleship element to it as far as like finding the ships, but then you can like kind of knock out their shields, and then they take damage, and I don't know. It looks kind of cool.
You sunk my medium blockade runner space freighter.
It doesn't have the same ring to it, no. I guess. But so look for that one coming out at a game, probably big box retailer near you. It's supposed to retail for $65 wow. and come out in around June. So $65 for
it seems a like big they're targeting retail. The more knowledgeable gamer. I mean, I think if just a schmo off the street was like Battleship for $65 in yeah. space, that's not worth it.
Well, with the kind of shutting down of Heroescape, I guess maybe they're looking for, you know, something that can fill a similar niche to that.
So. You know what would fill that niche?
Heroescape. Yeah, I got it. Go ahead.
Okay, before we get into the listener emails, we want to remind you that our favorite local gaming convention outside of Gen Con, HoosierCon.
Who is your con?
Who is your con indeed? It's going to be March 11th through the 13th. At the Holiday Inn at the Pyramids here in beautiful Indianapolis. And you can go to HoosierCon, that's WHOSYERCon.com. And you can see all of the game listings, sign up. It's completely free. They have incentives if you get a room. They've got a nice discounted rate, and there's gaming going on 24 hours, so you can get your fill there.
Yep.
You can. John's going to be running a Civilization game. It's full. But we're going to be doing a lot of open gaming.
Oh yeah, you can look for us. I'm not sure if it'll be warm enough to pull out the game on shirt, but yeah. I'll try to do that. And yeah, just look for us, and we'll have a big bag of games. I think Cody's also going to be running some Action Castle, right?
That's right.
And some other things.
I'll be running Action Castle using the Parsley RPG system Friday and Saturday night, and my wife Kaylin and I will be running Werewolf Friday and Saturday night. So. Come and get your fill, and come say hi, and let's game on, shall we?
Outstanding.
All right. Our first email comes from our friend Nathan Clark in beautiful New Zealand. And to summarize his email, if you remember back in episode 58, he asked us for advice, you know, if Descent would be a good link between board games and RPGs. And he wrote in to tell us that he decided to, after much consideration, he chose Claustrophobia.
Good choice.
Yeah, that's a good choice. He really cites that it's a shorter game than Descent. It's going to get to the table a lot more often, and superb components, heavy in theme. You're not wrong.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a good choice. So please write us back, Nathan, and let us know how you enjoyed it.
Yeah. We have an email from Paul Douglas Rivers. He enjoyed our review on Puzzle Strike, and this is kind of a neat story.
Yeah.
He was pleased to hear the positive review as he gave Puzzle Strike to his girlfriend for Valentine's Day. He chose it not only because of its hotness status, because it plays well with two players, it comes in a pink box, and because she really enjoys Puzzle Fighter on Xbox Live Arcade. Now, we received a few emails because we couldn't quite place where we had seen this theme before, and we had a couple people email in and say, it's this puzzle game that is on Xbox Live and other systems where it's essentially a puzzle game, but they slap like a fighting game element into it. You know, you see them fighting.
I downloaded it. Yeah. I downloaded the demo for it.
I did too.
It's fun. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it really feels like, well, I guess you think one way or the other, it either feels like Puzzle Strike or Puzzle Strike feels like it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, he goes on. He goes and he says, which the theme of Puzzle Strike directly rips off, by the way. Hence the line, simulates a puzzle game that doesn't exist, which simulates a fighting game which doesn't exist.
Wink, wink.
We've only played two games, and as badly as we played them, still enjoyed it. Unfortunately, it took that long to understand it since we have not played Dominion, and until now, its overarching deck-building mechanic, which itself isn't explained explicitly in the rules, was only a word I hear on gaming podcasts. She still loves the game. I hope she's not just saying that. And now we actually understand the most fundamental mechanic of the game, and we are looking forward to playing more of it. you know, that's really interesting because everyone we've taught and played it to has played Dominion.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Everything is like, oh, it's like Dominion.
I think that's an interesting just overall commentary on gaming these days. The fact that Dominion came on the scene a few years ago and created this whole new mechanic that just really had never been seen before, to where now it's the benchmark for, you know, you always refer to it when you're talking about deck building games now.
I would have to completely rewire my thinking if I was teaching it to people who hadn't played Dominion.
Yeah.
You know, just because it's so like, oh yeah, you know, you draw five chips like Dominion.
Right.
Throw it all in the bag like Dominion. Yeah.
It's like teaching collectible card games and using terms like TAP and, you know.
TAP is a registered trademark. Wizards of the Coast, LLC, sir.
Yeah. But things like things that refer to Magic the Gathering, and you always use that as the benchmark for CCGs of, oh, it's like tapping or whatever. And same thing for Dominion. You use that as the benchmark now. So that's, I don't know. That makes.
Kudos to you for digging through it, Paul.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, if you had never played Dominion before, then I could see how that would be really a challenge for you. So now go try Dominion.
Yeah. we got a brick of an email from Wade Kemper.
Yeah.
I think it actually went slower through the inner tubes because it was so heavy.
I think so.
But it was a great email. To summarize, the first part of it is, you know, he likes the new format of the show, kind of the more conversational aspect. And he had a few suggestions for us. And we always like suggestions on how we can make the show better for you, the listeners, and get more what you want on the show. First, he suggests more GM Academy, possibly as a regular segment. John and I have discussed this before, and you know, if there's enough meat out there, if there's enough questions you want to ask, then I'm fine dispensing my knowledge, as it were.
Yeah, we try not to compare ourselves to other podcasts, but we do notice as we listen to other podcasts in our genre of games that I think we're a little bit unique in that we're primarily focused on board games, but we do talk about RPGs, you know, maybe a lot more than some other board game podcasts do. So, you know, if you guys enjoy that and that's something, some content that you're interested in, yeah, let us know, because we're more than happy to talk about that.
Yeah. And his second suggestion is that he'd like to see more discussion on gaming culture, like the psychology of gaming in the setting, in the school setting. He's a high school teacher. Gaming superstitions, biases, and his favorite topic, why are most brick-and-mortar stores incredibly horrible? Except for Myriad Games at myriadgames.com.
It's a fine store.
Fine store. So, yeah, you know, and we kind of want to riff on that, and this is where we're going to do a little contest.
That's right.
A little impromptu.
Cody mentioned just about 5 minutes ago that you might have an opportunity to win some of these great Summoner Wars reinforcement packs. And Cody, tell them which reinforcement packs we have here.
We have the Grungor's Charge reinforcement pack, which I believe is for the Dwarves and Goblins.
Okay.
And then we have the... Rukar's Power reinforcement pack, which is for the Tundra Orcs and the I always call them the Fire Elves or the
I don't know.
Shoot. The elves.
The elves, yeah.
That's right. And we also have a very limited promo. We have Cyrook, Champion of the Mercenaries promo card right here in my hand.
Very nice. So we want to give you the opportunity to win these reinforcement packs. And let me tell you, if you don't own Summoner Wars and think, you know, I these wouldn't be really useful to me, go get Summoner Wars because it's a really good game. And then you could, you know, you can win these reinforcement packs. And so here's what we want to do for the contest, okay? Because we always want to improve. We don't want to stay stagnant. We want to become a better podcast. You know, we've said before that we are a say what we want, play what we want kind of a podcast.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
you
that.
You know, but that we do really appreciate feedback from you guys. And if we didn't have any listeners, we wouldn't have any reason to have a podcast at all. And so we want to ask kind of the tough question. And we want you to write in to the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
You're slipping.
You caught me sleeping there.
Or give us a voicemail by calling 4138 Game On, the Game On hotline, 4138 Game On, and answer this question, okay? If you could change or add one thing to Game On with Cody and John, what would it be? If you could change something or add something or take away something, if you could make one change to Game On podcast, what would it be? So we're asking for a little tough love here. So if there's something you just really don't like, you know, we'd love for you to tell us what that is. If there's something that you really like that you'd like to hear more of, or if there's a new segment or whatever, you know, no holds barred here. Just answer that question. If you could add, remove, or change one thing about the Game On with Cody and John, what would it be? And now we're going to give you a little extra incentive that if you send us a voicemail, we're going to give you two entries. Okay. Oh,
very nice. And how can they reach us by voicemail?
That's I just said that. Were you listening?
4138
Game on. You're reading through the reinforcement tracks, aren't you?
The Phoenix Elves. Okay, he was that was bugging me.
That was bothering him. Okay. Right. So yeah. So
I'm awake.
Game on inbox at gmail.com or the Game On hotline 4138 Game On, which will get you 2 entries in the contest. And
make sure you tell us your name, where you're from, so we can give you due credit. We'd like to see where our listeners are.
That's right.
Chiming in from.
Yeah, but we would love to give away these reinforcement packs, and so we'll pick someone at random from the great feedback that we get from you guys, and we'll let you know on our next episode. So if you're hearing this, then get those entries in ASAP.
Pronto. We're going to finish up our emails with one from Trent Howell, our good buddy at theboardgamefamily.com.
And hey, Trent.
And if you want to see some really great reviews with a family setting and a focus, check out theboardgamefamily.com. They do top-notch stuff, and Trent's a heck of a guy. So
great stuff.
Hope to have you come by Indy again.
Yeah.
But he said that, Cody and John, I just finished listening to your Pirates episode and the review of Merchants and Marauders. And thanks to your review, it jumped to the top tier on my games wish list. I think you sold me on the comparison to Sid Meier's Pirates computer game. We bought that a number of years ago, and the boys and I love it. Once you said that, I kept that in mind as you described the gameplay of Merchants and Marauders, and it gave me a great perspective. So whereas it had only been on my wish list as a curiosity before, it's a definite want now. Thanks for being so descriptive in your reviews, Trent and the Board Game Family. And, you know, it's funny because Kalen had never played it, so we bought it on Steam. It was like $10.
The Sid Meier's Pirates? Yeah.
And that's just a fun game. And it's exactly Merchants and Marauders, except for, you know, there's like a dancing mini game, I think, where you're wooing like governor's daughters, which that would have been an interesting mechanic.
Careful, that's going to be an expansion for Merchants and Marauders next. Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting how much that seems to just capture the spirit of that game. So I'm glad you like it, Trent, and that's a heck of a game, so you can't go wrong there.
Oh, I want to play that. I might bring that the next game on game night.
I think you should.
Ooh, sounds good.
Well, that wraps up another stellar episode of Game On with Cody and John, in my opinion.
I think it was better than the previous 59.
At least.
Yeah.
But we are very excited for you to join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be talking about what is definitely the new hotness, and that is Mansions of Madness from Fantasy Flight Games.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I hope it's good. You're going to take Descent, Betrayal at House on the Hill, Arkham Horror, mix it in a big pot and see what comes out. And you may get this before the game's even officially released to stores. So, check us out.
And hey, to even add to the excitement, we're going to have a special guest host with us in the studio on our next episode, and that is Jeremy DeSalinas, Drakenstrike on Board Game Geek, making all those great high-definition videos on Board Game Geek. He's going to join us, give his opinions on Mansions of Madness, and we'll talk to him about his videos and a bunch of other stuff. So
yeah, and if you haven't watched his Mansion of Madness videos, as we mentioned earlier, go watch them now. They're fantastic.
They're fantastic. So we want to remind you about our contest where you can win those great Summoner Wars reinforcement packs and the promo card. Yep. And so we want you to email us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com. See, yep. I was on it that time.
You're on it. And answer the question, what would you like to either add, subtract, or change about Game On with Cody and John to make it even better? And you can also leave us a voicemail at the Game On hotline.
At 4138 Game On.
You weren't quite as on at that time. 4138 Game On. And if you leave us a voicemail, you will get 2 entries because we want to hear your lilting voice over the airwaves there.
Flo is getting lonely.
Yeah, call the boys at Game On.
They're getting lonely.
Yeah. So as always, we love doing this podcast for you. Join us in 2 weeks. And until next time,
Game On.
This episode of Game On is sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. If you'd like to contact Cody and John, send them an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 4138-GAME-ON. For more content, check out our website at gameonpodcast.com. Join our guild on boardgamegeek.com and connect with other fans of the show. Become a fan of our show on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gameonpodcast. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check out other great shows on PulpGamer.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, Game On.
Well, howdy, gamers. It is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Unpopman Podcast.
Swing and a miss.
But the ice and snow have melted.
Finally. That's right. Spring training is about to begin, so our beloved Cincinnati Reds will be in action.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Yeah, and it's time to... I'm sorry.
I'm you sorry. Ever read that Footprints poem?
What's that?
I'm carrying your ass right now.
Thank you.